Welcome to First Gens. This is a podcast about first-generation Americans and filling in the blanks beside the hyphen. I'm Perrine.
And this is Skye. Thanks for joining us this week, y'all. I want to give a content warning here at the top of the episode. This episode, we will be talking about sexual assault and rape in particular. So if you... you know, aren't in a good space to listen to that, or if you're listening with little ones, we just wanted to make sure that you had a heads up. We really wanted to talk about this subject today because of the statistic that every 98 seconds an American is sexually assaulted. I mean, and I just want to let that sink in. Like, that's very powerful. Every 98 seconds an American is sexually assaulted.
That's just alarming, and that should be alarming for everyone. That shouldn't be alarming for just one gender. That should be alarming for everyone. And just like another like statistic as well, like one out of every six American women has been the victim of an attempted or completed rape in her lifetime. That's one out of every six.
Yeah. And so, you know, we're not doing this to be trendy or on topic or to go with any particular movement. We're doing this because it's important to talk about. And we're finally getting to a place in our society where folks are starting to listen. And so we wanted to make sure that we were using our platform to also be to lift up our voices and also the voices of other first gens, and one in particular who'll be sharing later. I know in college, you know, was leaving a party for a friend who was going away, or it was her birthday, I can't remember in particular. And I was giving a ride home to one of my very best friends, and, you know, we're about to leave, and our friend who the party was for was like, oh, well, you know, my friend, you know, this guy, he's also leaving. Do you mind giving a ride home? This is a guy that we'd been talking to all night and met him a couple of times before. We're like, sure, of course, whatever, give him a ride home. So myself, my friend, and this guy get into my car. I'm a logical person, and so, like, she lived closer, and he lived, like, right near me, so it made more logical sense to me to drop her off first, because she was the closest to the bar, and then drop him off, and then for me to go home from there. And so drop her off at her place, and, like, she was really, like, wary of it before. She was like, well, you know, like, do you want me to stay? Like, or I can just, like, stay at your house tonight or something. Like, she was just being really weird about the whole situation. And I was like, no, like, I'll just, you know, drop you off, drop him off, and go home. Cool. So I drop her off. She gets out of the car. And then we drive, and I, like, go to drop him off. And he, like, forced himself on me, like, for a kiss. And, like, so quickly that, like, I didn't really know what was happening. I personally always keep a knife in my car. And so, like, I pulled a knife on the guy.
That's real.
Yeah. And so, like, I was like, what are you doing?
First,
you know,
of
like,
all,
you need to get out. And, like, he got out of the car, like, without, like, thank God, you know, like, it was a fairly quick interaction where, like, I pulled a knife out and, like, he got up out and that was it. Like, it could have been a lot worse. And, like, when my friend was, like, really, like, insisting on it, like, I talked to her later, and it wasn't that she had a negative feeling about the guy, or she just didn't want me alone with a guy that, like, we didn't know super well. And, like, that wasn't something that had crossed my mind up until that point. I was like, well, you know, like, someone else that we know is vouching for him. Cool. Like, that was all I needed, like, at that moment. And so, like, that situation really made me, like, think twice about that, and, like, you know, to this day, I would do something different had that, you know, if I were to put in a similar situation again. And I remember I had a boyfriend at the time, and I remember telling him about it, like, the next day. And I remember he got mad at me, which pissed me off. Like, I don't go off on people often, but when I do, I do. And he was like, well, why were you in the car alone with him in the first place?
See.
Right. And I was like, well, what we're not going to do is blame me.
Right. What we're not going to do is pick apart, like, different circumstances and part mm-hmm. of this situation that were out of your control.
Exactly. And he was just, like, pissed off, and like we had a full-blown like drag out argument. And like I remember he was away at the time, so I don't remember where he was. So this was like a phone conversation. And so like I remember just like I think I was like taking a walk or something. I remember I was in public just like screaming on the phone at him because I was so pissed off at him. And like his reaction of like how dare you blame me, sir? Like you should be upset at this person. Like right. You should be like, if the roles were reversed, I'd be saying like, who is this person? Let me go find this man and fight him.
Right.
That would have been my response. Like had right. a friend told me this, or had he told me that like someone had forced themselves on him. Like, so like the fact that like I ended up getting blamed in the situation, and eventually like he and I resolved it, and like I came to like a quote unquote understanding. Mm-hmm. But like for the rest of our relationship, like his reaction really loomed over my head yeah. of like really honestly, like how terribly he reacted in that situation. And it made me see him in a completely different light, into a light where I did not respect him the same way after that.
Unfortunately, that happens in so many cases. Mm-hmm. Like, why is it that the victim becomes the one who's blamed? Whether it's what she wore or how she sounded when she said no, or, you know, the circumstance of in the car or being somewhere at the wrong time. Like mm-hmm. it happens so often, too often in our society, and it's something that has to be checked. And another thing that has to be checked is the whole idea, and this is something that is within American and Liberian culture, boys will be boys. Mm-hmm. I'm sick of it. We need to end that, okay? This entire season we are talking about gender and just different facets of gender. But accountability has to come in action, okay? There is just too many instances where, like, a woman is either walking down the street or walking by a group of men or hugging a group of men or whatever it may be, like, greeting. You know, we greet. And when we greet people in Liberian culture, especially elders, like people older than us, if they're all in a room, you go around the entire room, you hug, and then you kiss them on the cheek. Okay?
Everyone.
Every single person.
And you're taught this from a young age. You do not get a choice. You do not get autonomy
no.
in it. You have to do it or it is rude and you are being disrespectful of your elders.
Period. And if you can imagine that, and yes, that is a culture thing and that's like a tradition thing, there's also a lot of discomfort that can mm-hmm. come from that. Okay? Just putting that out there.
Yeah, we're talking period. At a very young age, like to disregard our autonomy and our desires to whether or not we want to hug or kiss somebody.
Yes. And it's not even just like, oh, they're your uncle, you're supposed to. Yeah, like whatever, that's fine. But then sometimes when it's not an uncle or it's just, you know what I mean?
Or it's a creepy uncle.
Or it's a creepy
uncle. It doesn't matter
uncle.
If this person's related to you by
yes.
blood. They can still, you can still say no. And
yes.
that's not necessary. I know personally, like, that's not something that I was taught in terms of like, when you're greeting an elder about not being able, you don't have an option not to hug them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And consent is huge. Consent is something that it does not just apply to one thing. It applies to so many things. And I just hope that as a society, we can get to that point where we can teach people in a variety of different instances, like when, how, and that it's okay to say no. And it's okay that when you're uncomfortable, to say you're uncomfortable, and for that to be heard, and for that to be valid, and for that to be taken seriously. And I pray for the day that that can come within our society, because there's just been just too many instances. I've just heard too many friends. I've been in too many awkward situations and unfortunate situations where it just didn't need to get to that point. It just did not have to happen. And so that's just something that I definitely just like wanted to bring to light.
This is Jeannie's story.
I am Jeannie Francisco, and I am full Filipino American. California was a very interesting place for me personally to grow up. I never felt like I totally fit in. Other than the fact that I'm 100% a beach girl, but I've quickly found out that give me my bikini and some sunshine and I'm totally fine and that's all that I really need. So I grew up, was born and raised in Long Beach, California, but I pretty much claim like all of Orange County, because even if I was born and raised there, I played a lot of volleyball in Orange County and ended up going to college there, like right next to Disneyland, had a Disneyland pass, like that was just a cool thing to do everywhere. Seal Beach, California quickly became like my most sentimental, I love that place, like even when I was a kid, like that was the beach that I enjoyed going to as a kid. And then even as an adult, like that is my one place. It just is that small town feeling, and it kind of reminds me of like the South. It was an experience when it came to people, because I, growing up, felt so introverted, and I didn't really understand why, because I was like, I have so much energy and so much like of something inside of me that I just wanted to like let out and like go do, but I never felt like I had anywhere to do that. I always felt like I had to live the status quo of keeping my head down and working hard and don't make too many friends, like network really well, but like don't like get too close to people. And it just was never something that was said, but after learning and failing and like succeeding and doing all the things that got me to where I did go in life, which was collegiate volleyball, was the main thing of my whole entire life. It was like, you want to get a scholarship, like that was really pushed on me. Growing up, not because like they said it, but it was like, oh well, we're spending all this money, like hopefully like by the time you get to college, like we won't have to pay for that. And definitely did that, which was awesome. But even in that world, I never felt like I fit in. Like nothing ever felt so like, okay, like I just want to be outgoing and spontaneous and everything else. Like people would just stare at you weird if you like loved them too much or loved them too hard. And it was weird, like coming out to North Carolina, like it's completely different. It's just like everybody likes people. And I always tell people that out here, no one ever believes me, but I always tell them like, I actually really like people. And so being in California, like people don't really like people. Being a gym owner previously to living in North Carolina, I looked the part. And I was just different enough to where people were like, ooh, like, who is that? Like, ooh, like, she can lift heavy. Like, that's cool. Like, let's go, like, learn who she is. And different out here than in California even. But in California, when being a gym owner, it was very, a lot of, like, expectation and anticipation of, like, who I was going to be in terms of an athlete, a gym owner, and a coach. And every single category was completely different. Like as an athlete, I was just, which it was my favorite part because all I was expected to do was work hard. And that I'm great at. Like I can set my mind to something and accomplish it. Like I am a firm believer in, or I have a lot of faith in myself in that aspect. The way that I've always seen that moment in time, like our memories shift and they always like things become clear and things become very like you question every single thing. And where I've really been able to overcome is by like continuously trying to pinpoint the details of everything that was going on. Like it's like, I guess that's just my mindset and like my personality too. Like I really want to pick apart, like, gosh, like we all ask that question, like, how did I get here? And even now, like, still being somebody who honestly, like, still struggles with that pain and that grief, and knowing that a lot of people forget that when we go through something so traumatic, like, that is a loss. Like, it should be treated as like, as important as losing a loved one, because it's not something physical, it's not a physical person that we're losing, we forget that like that is something to grieve over. And over the past couple weeks, like even now, I've had to really come to terms with actually grieving over that moment. And it was at a good time because I just got I'm getting through like grieving over my father, like losing my father in October, and grieving over him really showed me how I can grieve over this traumatic experience and that it's okay to grieve. And people out there like do need to understand that, like, just be like, we always, me, my personality, I want to get to the I'm strong, I'm amazing, like I've overcome, like I've done great things and I'm doing great things and my life is going somewhere. I want to get to that part. I want to skip everything. And so I trick myself sometimes into thinking that I'm already there and I'm not. And it's like, where do you think that like you need to be right now? Like, where can you, like, how can you live this moment? And for me, it was really looking back over the past couple weeks, looking back and seeing what I had gone through. In my freshman year of college, I had great friends and I had a boyfriend from high school, my high school sweetheart, and he was incredible, like such a good guy, and like we, that was the only relationship that I can really look back on and know that like that was God-centered. I grew up Catholic and it was nice to have somebody that wanted to keep my purity. And in my freshman year of college playing volleyball, I actually tore my ACL and I had to listen to my coaches and listen to my trainers tell me that I needed to play on it until the next person in my position was trained. And that was really tough because obviously, like, clearly that's something painful, like legit painful. And so I played on it from the end of my freshman season all through spring season and into summer. And so that summer leading into my sophomore year, I reconnected with two of my really good friends from high school, and they played on an open gym like league, and they would go almost every day. We would play volleyball, we would go out, do college things and party, and like it was summer break, like we had fun. Like I did terrible things and I just like had the time of my life, like playing volleyball like every single day with like two of your really good friends, like seeing your boyfriend whenever, and like just kind of having that freedom finally. Like I grew up super sheltered, like I wasn't allowed to like go out on an actual date until I was 18, and being in college I was like, oh, I can do whatever I want, like cool. So all that summer, we played volleyball almost every day all together. Like we were inseparable, the three of us. So me and these two guys. And I was just really trying to keep my mind off of like how painful it was and wanting to have that knee surgery like as soon as possible. And so playing volleyball and partying all day and night was like the way to do it for me. And when it came to the day before we had our double days, which is practice and working out twice a day, we started that 2 weeks before school started, so it didn't interfere with school at all. But it meant that we had to be at the campus 2 weeks before we started school. And so I had moved into my new apartment that summer, and like at the very end, right before, probably like 2 days before I started double days. And the day before I was like, hey guys, like I can't do anything anymore. Like I have to be responsible. And volleyball was very important to me. Like I was getting paid to play volleyball at a college. And technically like that means like the college, like they own you. Like they pay for everything. They give you stipends so that you can live off campus if you want. They pay to make sure that you have enough food, that you can still live and have a good time. So I take it very seriously. The night before I was like, you know what? Like I'm not going out. I'm not doing anything. Like I have to be up at 5 a.m. And so I told the guys that, and of course they were like, oh, well, you know, we're already out. And these are guys that I spent almost every day of summer with and knew in high school and everything else. And when I told them that, they were like, oh, we're already out. We're like right by your college, because Long Beach was about an hour away from Cal State Fullerton. and they were from my hometown, but we used to play in Orange County a ton. And so they were already in Orange County with like all of their friends at like some house party and trying to get me to go out. And I was like, nope, sorry. Like I have volleyball tomorrow and have to be up at 5 a.m. So they were like, well, we're super drunk. Can we just like crash on your couch? And we had couch surfed all summer. Like they were two guys that I completely trusted, like 100%. They were my friends. And I was like, yeah, of course. Like that's not a big deal. Like we've done this for so long now. And so I had them come over and they were still like, they still had a bottle and they were still drinking and all this stuff. And like, I was just like, hey, bye, peace out. Like, I have to go to sleep. And clearly, like, I didn't drink or do anything because I wanted to be responsible for once that summer. And good timing, great. And I went to bed. And so about an hour later, one of the guys like came into my room and was like trying to like cuddle up on me. And he knew that I had a boyfriend and he actually had a girlfriend. And I was just like, dude, Tommy, like we can't do this right now. Like, this is not okay. And so he was just like, okay, fine. And then like left. And then not even like 5 minutes later, which I find out later on, they like really weren't as drunk as they seemed to be. Both of them came into my room and assaulted me. And one of them was in the military. So big, strong guy. Like they were both over 5'10", 5'11". That is like one moment in time where I had to go back and forth between like blaming myself, of course, and blaming them, and then just really trying to wrap my head around the fact that it was just something that happened. You know, like it's just people have different motives, different reasons for doing things, and I'll never know what those reasons were for them, especially since it burned not only a friendship, but like their reputation in our group of friends, because after that, like, a lot of people did end up like knowing. They didn't know who they did it to, but people ended up knowing, and it didn't seem like a surprise. And that's scary to me, like as a woman, like to know that you can build this friendship, this trust with men or anybody really, like you can build this like friendship with them and it can turn around. And that was never the motivation. It was your friendship was never the motivation. And that to me was like really sad. And even now, like what I've been grieving over is the fact that like my innocence was taken away. Like I didn't really get the chance to fully be with the boyfriend that I had. And even he broke up with me because it was really hard on him. And that's not his fault either. You know, like it's just that like something happened that really like tore relationships apart. And after that moment, like I stopped going to church. I didn't go to church for 8 years all the way until I moved back to North Carolina in 2016. It was just something that I was trying to do in my own strength. And because now I have my faith and the knowledge that I have that like Jesus loves me and he already died for not only for my sins, but he died for theirs too. You know, and a lot of what I've been learning on forgiveness is truly just that he doesn't just take away my shame. Like I have to look at the person next to me and look at the people that have done me wrong and know that like he's taken theirs too. And that like if he forgives them, then like I can forgive them too. Not that I like 100% am over everything, because like I said, like for the past few weeks it has been pretty difficult, and like I have been grieving this process and really looking at it from the perspective of like I really lost something there. And because after that moment it was a downward spiral of me drinking and having sex and doing things that I just really didn't want to do, but I didn't see no as an option. And as a woman, like it's scary when you have these larger people in front of you and thinking to yourself, well, like, what if I do say no? Then it's like, that makes it 10 times scarier. And you almost convince yourself to go, okay, well then, yeah, like, let's just do it so that I can just not feel like I did. And even saying that out loud over the past few weeks to a couple of like my really close friends was really difficult because I kept feeling like I was hitting the self-destruct button all through those 8 years. And even a couple times, like, I know I didn't want to have sex. I know that I like, but I didn't make it clear anymore. And to feel powerless, like, as a woman, like, it almost makes you feel powerless in so many other aspects too. And it was a struggle with my own identity and really not knowing like how to deal with being a woman and knowing that I still have the power to control the situation. And sometimes I do still find myself questioning, like, do I really have a choice? Like, and not only when it comes to sex, but when it comes to anything that is, in my perspective, not of God. You know, like, am I really that easily influenced? And like, in my mind, like, I'm a headstrong person. Like, I know what I want, and but at the end of the day, more than what I know that I want people to be happy. And that's really scary and sad to me, because immediately the power can shift just because I want that person to get what they want. At the end of the day, like, I have to trust and know that, like, even just that story is going to make a difference because of the person that I am right now. Like, the importance of what I went through and who I am now, like, a lot of people that do know, like, when I originally told them, like, it was mind-blowing. Like, you couldn't even, like, see that that's something that I had to go through in order to be this person I am today. And as a woman, like, we all have those fears, and it's scary, and it's something that we have to, like, continuously give over to God and be like, hey, like, can you please take care of this? And like, it's like, to be on the forefront on of people's minds, especially right now with all the trials going on. And I am like happy that that was one, but even like listening to some of those girls' stories, it was very like, wow, like, I don't know if I could actually like stand up and do that. I mean, I could, but I just don't know like what I would even have to go through. And like, replaying things in your mind is like, it hurts over and over again. You know, like, it doesn't necessarily reopen the wound, but it definitely scratches it. It was a very interesting moment for me to go through that and immediately turn around and like 2 months later have ACL surgery. And then like literally like everything in my life was kind of ripped apart. It was like my innocence was gone. My boyfriend had dumped me. I had severe depression. Like, I just moved into that apartment and I didn't spend one night in my room. Like, I slept on the couch like every single day. And immediately having to have knee surgery, like, I couldn't go out of town with my teammates. Like, I was stuck at home. And now I'm like having to deal with all these things like by myself, like in my lonesome. The biggest thing that I remember from that time was people saying that I was doing it for attention, that I'd like said all these things and that I was being self-harmful because I wanted attention. And it's like, okay, like, my biggest thing now is like, what if they do want attention? That's the point, is that they need the attention that like they need it, because they're just like, dude, I went through this thing, like, help me. That's their way of going, like, help me, you know? And a lot of people like put this huge barrier on how we're supposed to get through these things, and there is no one way. Just like there's no one way of like grieving over my father. Like, there is no one way. It took me a little bit of time to be like, to even like cry about it, because I was being so strong for my family. And I was like, Like, I just need to keep it together. Like, everything needs to be okay. And I miss him, and I want to shine this light on the situation. But at the same time, like, I just had to understand that, like, grieving about it is, like, extremely important. And if somebody is crying out for help, then allow them that opportunity to cry out to you for help. You know, like, there are questions that you can definitely ask in those situations. And when you do see somebody hurting, I truly believe that the best way to go about it is to not have to talk about the certain situation, but just to find a way, like, find what they need, like, find what they're wanting out of a conversation. Maybe you just need to be there. A lot of the time, like, I just needed to be surrounded with, like, good people. Like, I didn't want anything from them. I just wanted to feel like I was actually safe with friends, and that I wasn't going to, like, be hurt by my friends, like, sitting there. I wanted to be able to, like, go to sleep and, like, know that somebody was, like, not guarding the door, but just, like, that was there making sure that I was still okay. And, like, nightmares come and all these other things come, and it's just, when somebody cries out for help, like, don't get mad, you know, like, it's their way of just really trying to deal with it. And I am very thankful for that, you know, like, I'm thankful that people actually try to turn to something. It might be the wrong thing, but, like, when they are trying to turn to you, like, don't miss it, you know, like, I look for those people to just, like, even just stand next to, like, legit, like, I will, if I see somebody, like, upset, I'll just, like, inch my way closer, and, like, maybe they'll open up, or maybe they just want me to stand right there. And most of the time, like, people just want to be in community. One of the biggest teachings that I've had so far is to honor, like, every single person, whether they're above you, below you, next to you, rich, poor, it doesn't matter. Like, honor isn't the same thing as respect. Like, you can not respect somebody, you cannot agree with somebody and still honor them because God placed them in the position that they are in. Like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, like, what their skin color is, what their gender is, or anything else like that. But to choose to value them in the position that they are in, because not because you do, but because God does, like, that is 100%, like, something that I strive to do every single day. Grieving is very much so just living in this moment, whether it's a good one or a bad one. Enjoy it for what it is, or grieve it for what it is. Like, if you're going to be sad for just that moment. But if you feel great, if you feel good, then enjoy feeling good. And a lot of people are like, they have those spurts of like, oh, it's a great day. But then they force into their own minds like, oh, but I lost my dad. And it's like, you don't have to be that way. Like, you can definitely have the good days and not feel guilty about it. You can have the good days and be okay with the fact that, like, you know what? Like, I wasn't hurting for those, like, 10 seconds, or which turns into a minute, or hopefully a whole day of, like, not hurting. And maybe that'll turn into a week of, like, maybe here and there you have your moments of, like, oh, I miss him. But also knowing that, like, if you do have that, like, day or week or month that, like, really hurts, then let it hurt, you know? Like, it's okay to let it ride. Like, don't try to be one way or the other.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed what you heard, and we really hope you did, subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts. It helps other people find us and puts us even higher on the rankings. We can also be found on SoundCloud and wherever else you get your podcast. Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at FirstGens. That's #1, STGENS. Make sure you follow us and get bonus content on our website That's firstgenspodcast.com. First Gents was created by me, Perrine DeShield, and the show is co-hosted by the talented, lovely, amazing, and fabulous Sky Wilson. All music heard on this episode was created by our musical composer, Nick Stubblefield, and our audio engineer is Trey Pierce, aka Self. Thank you to our roundtable crew, Jorge, Diana, and Emmanuel. And a special thank you to Jeannie for sharing her first-gen experience. Takes a lot of guts. First Gents is a proud member of Huga, an amazing co-working space based out of Charlotte, North Carolina. Thank you so much for all of your love and support.